Hello and welcome to the show. Welcome to Fight Buddies. It is a podcast I've done before, but I haven't done in a while. I'm here with Brian, who you know, obviously from Gas Digital.
Yep, I'm here. This was a great episode. Robin is fucking so fun, man.
Robin Black back on the show. He's been on the music show. He's great. He's giving a we're doing a little rundown of the event from Saturday night, UFC Jacksonville, which was just electric and amazing. But with Robin, you get so much more than just a recap, right? He's like, yeah, so articulate.
So much insight.
He's incredible.
And this maybe is one of the best cards. This is probably going to be the best card of the year moving forward. I mean, I can't see something topping this.
Yeah, they set the bar really high. So we're talking about that UFC card, and we got a preview a little. We're talking a little bit about this May 7th card with Bellator. You know, Robin works closely with Bellator. So if you like what you hear today, please like and subscribe. Smash that like button like you would your enemies, or like Matt Brown would his enemies, and support Immortal Coffee. It's like a Matt Brown elbow to the face. It packs a punch. Go to theimmortalcoffee.com. Use a promo code JOSTA21 and check out gasdigitalnetwork.com for the archives. Use the code JOSTA when you go to gasdigitalnetwork.com so you can hear my music podcast. You can go to the bonus episodes. I got a movie podcast and any of the old Fight Buddies episodes. But I've had a ton of MMA guests. So if you're into MMA, I got old guests, old episodes with guests like Nick Diaz, Josh Barnett, Matt Mitrione, Kimbo Slice, everybody. I mean, seriously, Matt Brown, Chris Camozzi. There's a lot of great episodes in the archive at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code JOSTA. But yeah, we have Robin Black on the Fight Buddies podcast today. And if you like this episode, hopefully this will be one of many more. Now on to the show.
Fight Buddies, Fight Buddies, Fight Buddies.
We like violence.
Fight Buddies, Fight Buddies, Fight Buddies. Welcome to the Fight Buddies show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Buddies podcast. If you are new to this channel, make sure you hit the like and subscribe. If you're wondering why this heavy metal guy is talking about MMA, I will say this. I've done this podcast before. You can hear episodes with Nick Diaz, Kimbo Slice, Matt Mitrione, Chris Camozzi, Matt Brown, and a ton of other MMA fighters and personalities over at the Gas Digital Archive. Plus, you can check out my music podcast, The Josta Show. But hit the like and subscribe and welcome to the channel if you're just checking us out now for the first time. My guest today is MMA analyst and all around great dude, the Baron of the Bink, or the Bishop of the Bink. What title start with the B?
I like Bishop.
Yeah, the Bishop of Bink. I was going to say like the Canadian calf slicer. I don't know. I was trying to think of funny intros, but Mr. Robin Black, who's been on my music podcast as well. Thank you for joining me. How's it going,
man? Yeah. Hey, any chance to talk about fighting? I'm down, but I just want to hang out with you. I haven't caught up with you in a while. So I'm like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, yeah, man, let's hang out. We'll talk about fights and it'll be wicked. And my dog's awesome. Here. He's old.
I love your dog. Removed. Oh, yeah, what's their name?
Pluto. He's 15 and he just had a bunch of his teeth removed. His breath used to just smell like ass and now it smells fresh. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
I got one that size.
Yeah,
I got to get his teeth removed too, I think. Yeah, he does. He has like fish face all the time. Yeah. You know, I thought about bringing back this podcast for a while, but it was really the UFC Jacksonville, the whole event. It was so electrifying. The thrill of agony and or the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat was in this event. Over 15,000 in attendance, whether or not you agree or disagree with having a crowd right now. I just thought, God, it was such a good card. I want to bring back the podcast and I want to talk about fights.
Yeah, man. Hey, like, you know, putting a crowd in a place, some people will disagree for lots of reasons, but one thing it would have done, even if they did, is go, oh shit, when will we be okay to do that? Because all of a sudden the idea of being able to get together and watch a rock show or watch fights or whatever, whether it's now for you or it's soon, you look at that and go, man, well, you see all the shit we're missing, you know? And people, people were lit because you will be. Like, that idea of all of us getting together and sharing something is heavy and we miss it.
It is. And it was very emotional from the start. Like the first two fights were such bangers. I just want to give them a shout out. We're going to talk mainly about the main card, but I wanted to shout out Ariane Carnelosi. Brian, what's the opponent? Oh, and Liang Na. Carnelosi's like a little, she's got those like Dwight Howard shoulders. She's a little like tank. She's awesome. Yeah. I'm a big fan. She was great. That fight was incredible. If you missed it, go check it out on ESPN Plus. And then Molina had a big moment. Boxing in the third round was crisp. He looked great. Brian, what was his opponent's name? I don't want to butcher it. And shout out to Brian. He's joining us here. A lot of you know him probably from my show. And of course, what other shows, Brian, if you want to?
I do BYM. I do Part of the Problem with Dave Smith, who's maybe going to be the president in a couple of years. We'll find out soon. That shit is wild. I also do The Thing Is with Shannon Lee and Good Sugar with Marcus Antebi and Ralph Sutton. I'm looking right now. I'm embarrassed to say that I did not watch the undercard. I don't want to say my illegal stream didn't work, but
your illegal stream didn't work.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, check them out. There was a bunch of great fights on that. And then also in the regular prelims, Randy Brown, big moment, choking out the Brazilian cowboy was a highlight for me as well. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah. You know, going into it, I was doing Sports Center in Canada and they were asking about the crowd, right? And like, how does it benefit somebody or who's it harder for? And they asked a really smart question, you know, if it's somebody who's kind of really lit by a crowd or if it's somebody who performs better, like without the added pressure, who will do better? And the truth is like, these are all psychological skills, like performance skills. You have them as a musical performer over time, whether you identify them or not. There's a certain amount of psych skills that you possess, like knowing the exact zone where you are in the optimal state of performance, being able to assess that. Going out to perform, especially with a fight, can you assess, am I too psychologically aroused? Am I too understimulated? Finding that spot and then upregulating or downregulating your mind into the optimal zone. All of those skills are now fucking way out the window because you're so unfamiliar with that, with the crowd that will affect your ability to get yourself into it, which is probably why you saw these crazy fights on the undercard, because everybody's just over mentally stimulated. It's not just, you know, when we talk about it, we'll say, you know, oh, the crowd urged them on, or they felt the crowd is Hulkamania. Those things are all true, but there's a real psychological process happening where you're just over lit and everybody's kind of thinking pure offense, pure go. And that was kind of cool to see. And it would have felt unfamiliar because it's been so long.
Absolutely. And it's not often that you see an event on TV and you feel that electricity through the TV, right? Like when you watch a concert on YouTube or when you watch a video on someone's Instagram of a concert, it never has that same sort of vibe. If you were there, you go, wow, I remember it being so much crazier. At least I always get that. But this was one of those events where just from start to finish, there was moments the hair stood up on the back of my neck. It makes me jones to get back out there.
Oh God. Yeah. And then think about this, like audiences kind of just perform the way audiences are supposed to perform because they've been in audiences for so long. My wife's in musical theater. At the end of many shows, almost most shows, people clap and then they do a standing ovation. So what the fuck are you people doing? This standing ovation, like even clapping, like being so excited you smash your hands together, that was once an involuntary reaction. Like standing up and freaking out. That was just an involuntary reaction to what you felt. And then over time, we just act like audiences. But then all of a sudden, when you haven't been in an audience for a long time, it becomes this weird involuntary reaction again, right? It's a wild thing when you really think about it.
Yeah, and I definitely jumped up out of my seat multiple times, which I normally don't do at home. And I would if, you know, you have to at a live event because sometimes someone's taller in front of you or sometimes the people in front of you do it and you want to see. So yeah, I thought about all these things and I knew that you would have some fun stuff to add in. So let's go to the main card here and let's talk first about Anthony Smith TKO win due to doctor stoppage over Jim Crew. We've seen this injury before, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Often. So there's a nerve that kind of wraps around at the top of the bone and down to the ankle. And that nerve you can be accessed. People think it's in there, like, oh, the calf kick will make the leg go numb. But there's just as many times you see at the insertion of the hamstring above the back of the knee, or even on the back of the knee, or even occasionally at the insertion of the quadricep above the knee. You know, you hit that, it hits the nerve goes dead. The leg is called drop foot, because that nerve, among other things, is responsible for making your foot be able to do this. So when the nerve is smashed, it's temporary. Now, like today, he's probably walking fine. It's just
the knee is jacked up.
Yeah, if the knee is also damaged, like if actual physical damage was done to the knee, that's an addition to what we saw with the drop foot. The drop foot is a response to the nerve being smashed. But yeah, it happens quite a lot. You know, it's weird. Like, it's difficult to talk about this one without also talking about Chris Weidman, because they are opposite ends of the exact same thing. They really are.
Yeah.
They're reactions of the same process of what's happening as we martial artists respond to the organism that's changing martial arts.
For sure. And Anthony Smith looked good. I thought the jab, you know, was a little bit shades of GSP. I don't remember him utilizing that a lot in past fights. If I'm just, I don't know if you had that same observation.
So in theory, so one of the greatest things you can, where you can celebrate true greatness in like a real, you know, special performance of a martial artist, often in kickboxing, but in any kind of fighting, is when you can win just with fundamentals. Right. And sometimes, and this is where it's really interesting, you know, strategically, sometimes you're just way better than somebody in many areas. But you're like, if we just keep it simple, if my jab is crisper, my ability to throw it and express the jab is better than your ability to defend it, my ability to stay at the right space and time to be able to do it, and then throw a low kick on you, you celebrate great kickboxers who can win an entire fight with a jab and a low kick. It's sort of a, within the world of kickboxing, it's something really appreciated. And that's kind of what he thought. He's like, if I keep it really fucking simple, I'll beat this guy. And so that jab was a reflection of that. And even when George, later in George St. Pierre's career, you compared it, George literally, they simplified it to that. Him and Faraz just were like, if you can jab John Fitch for 25 minutes, jab John Fitch for 25 minutes. And that's what he did. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it opened up the opportunity to get that kick that did end the fight. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, yeah. I love it. I'm happy for Anthony Smith too. I do enjoy watching him fight. He's had a couple of pretty brutal losses in the recent past. Right. So what do you think would be best for him next? What do you think of that division as a whole?
So Anthony Smith, I noticed at the beginning, they were like number six in the light heavyweight division is what they said. And then he won. The same scenario. And these days I look at it when we talk about how the fight went and what we might think about for the future. I try to think honestly in terms of, like, we used to be able to talk about it as if it was like pro wrestling. It's like, well, maybe this guy could fight this guy. Maybe this would happen. Truthfully, now you understand that the guys who have some kind of leverage are able to take some kind of control over their thing. When you go to book a tour, you can go, if you want to go to Pittsburgh, you want to go to Philadelphia, you book it. Anthony Smith and everybody in that fights in the UFC and other places like that, there's a certain amount of, we need you to fill this spot on this card against this guy, unless you have leverage. And Anthony Smith has a certain amount now. People like him. He's got lots of followers. He's got a show on Sirius and all the little extra things. So he can kind of do what's best for him. And I'm guessing there's sort of two main streams for most of these guys. Do I want to try to become the champion, or do I want to have meaningful fights that pay me really well, that I find exciting, that I dig the fights, that it grows my business in other ways that are valuable, et cetera. You know, and I think he's somewhere in both. You know, Jan Blachowicz is a light heavyweight champion. You can look at it and go, who else is kicking around that Dominic Reyes was beat by him? Who else is kicking around that has enough of a name that could try to go get that fight? I think I could do it. And if you're Anthony Smith, you think you could do it. So I think you go find somebody in the top five, you win that fight, and then you try to fight for the title. It'll be the last time he gets to probably do that with a guy with 50 odd fights. And so you try to figure out for these guys, if you're lucky enough to have the leverage, you figure out, what do I want and how do I get there? And if you want one more run at that title, that's right now for Anthony Smith.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, because I was thinking about it and I thought, yeah, do you want to see him run it back with like Glover or any of these guys where then you would be sort of, if you're a big Anthony Smith fan, you'd be emotionally invested in seeing him get that. And that would set up a trilogy with any of these guys he's lost to.
Robin, do you think that he can beat Jan?
I mean, yes, he can beat Jan.
I mean, anybody would he can beat Jan? Really?
Yeah, he could. He has the
capacity. But fan excitement, I don't think, would be there for that. I feel like the fans would be so heavy in favor of Jan that it would, I don't know. I mean, it'd be great for him, but does he want that right now?
Yeah, I think you go and you find somebody in the top five or around it that you think you can have a big night against. But again, like that, it depends. Like Dustin Poirier just did not explore the idea of going, well, Michael Chandler, Oliveira, whatever, man. I'm going to make $9 million fighting Conor McGregor in a more meaningful fight that is going to matter to me and my kids, my story and my future. That's what I'm going to go do. So I really these days like, especially when there is somebody who has some amount of actual control over their career, I like to think of it in that terms. What do they want to do? And for him, he literally might look at it and what can we do? Like what will the audience get into? What will the UFC see value in enough, make enough money doing? And I don't know if Jan Blachowicz would do that, but it could after one more big fight. So you find one big fight, depending on how that goes, you either continue to pursue Jan Blachowicz or you go and try to avenge one of these losses. As long as for these guys at Anthony Smith's stage, there's got to be value in it for them outside of just another paycheck, something that gets them excited. And you're right. Avenging a loss is a big one for a lot of these guys, really proud guys like Anthony Smith.
Yeah. And Glover's a Connecticut guy. So that one just came to mind. I thought,
man, Glover's a badass though, man. Glover's a fucking badass. Like that's a really hard fight for anybody.
Yeah, you know? For sure. For sure. So you brought up Weidman. Obviously, it was a horrific injury. We've seen it a couple times before with Corey Hill and Anderson Silva. But to have this happen with Weidman, however many years, what was that, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
We won't show. Don't worry, anybody who's crazy or who is weak in the stomach. We're not going to show the fracture there, but the compound break. It's bad.
Tibia, fibula snapped, broken in half. Those knobs will be floating around in the air. It's bad, right? All you got to do is go to Instagram and follow 100 people who are involved in fighting, and you'll see 100 of them. They all might get their Instagrams taken down. The UFC doesn't fucking play that game. It's everywhere.
They don't even let BYM use anything.
Yeah, I know. They'll hit you. Actually, I got my Instagram taken down at 103 or 104,000 followers at the time, and they just killed it. To scratch. And speaking of BYM, Joe Rogan, who's of course for me has been like a big, you know, has helped me immensely. But of the other people who were like, "Hey, Robin got his Instagram taken down. Please follow him." Mr. Bisping was one of those guys. So I fucking appreciate that guy. Yeah, like such a good dude. You get your shit taken down. They would even take up BYM. They would. Michael Bisping will get strikes if he uses it. You can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. But that's a conversation for another day. We don't run the NBA or the UFC, but they have opposite strategies. One says everybody use everything. This will help our company. The other says we'll sell this to partners and then we'll have to attack our fans who use our stuff. But that's their business. I don't run either of those things. So.
Yeah, no. And I'm glad you brought that up, because if they are going to monetize such a horrific injury, I hope in some way it can help his recovery or his bills or whatever he needs. Yeah. He's a Long Island guy. I'm a big fan. Shout out to Weidman and his whole camp and his family. And I wish him the best, quickest recovery possible. But man, it's hard to watch, but it will bring them a lot of traffic and it will bring them a lot of eyes who like to, I mean, we like violence, but we don't like it to that extent.
No, I don't like seeing people fall off their skateboard and their arm backwards. I like watching somebody skateboard, but I don't like watching that.
Right.
It's the same thing. I love to watch fighting. It's a beautiful art form. I don't like that. It makes me, I felt for, Chris is my friend. Like, you know, Wonder Boy is his brother-in-law. Wonder Boy's dad is a very good friend of mine. Like, you know, their whole, I was looking at it, like Chris is going to be, he's in agony. He's not getting surgery, I don't think, till Monday. So, you know, people are like, oh, is it career ending? It's like, fuck, never mind career ending. Like, what's his family going to go through in the next weeks and months? Like, you know, Chris has made money, so that's good. But I hope he's good. You know, I'll send him a message in the next couple of days. I love that guy. Like, he's a great guy and he's a really, really good human being, you know, and that sucks. When you look at it, the reason I said it's connected to the Glover or to the Anthony Smith one is like fighting is an organism. And it's, you know, when you look at how arena rock, what happened with arena rock and then punk rock, and then you look at hair metal and then you look at grunge, and there's certain trends that happen. It's the same thing in fighting, only these trends are in, you know, instead of long guitar solos or short ones, they're in the way that people fight and they're in belief systems. You know, the Thais have been kicking each other at the knee and below the knee and on the calf for 1,000 years. They learned all this shit. But the same thing happens over and over again. So for the last 2-3 years, I mean, calf kicks have been happening. Michael Chandler lost his title to Brent Primus with a kick in the exact same spot that Anthony Smith kicked Crute. And so people have known about it. An audience, oh man, just all you got to do to beat Conor McGregor is just calf kick him. We are fucking spamming each other with these kicks. And we're doing it because we think there's no consequences. It's just a free shot. I'll kick you in the leg. Your leg will go numb. I'll win. That'll be great. Stop Conor McGregor. Kick him in the calf. Fight Nate Diaz. Kick him in the calf. There's consequences. We're taking the baseball bat of our shin and we're smashing it against another guy's leg. As soon as our shins connect low down on the weak points like that, we'll break our legs. All these calf kicks are happening constantly because the way that the trends go from long drum solo to fucking big drum set to small drum set, whatever, is the offense becomes popular and then it works and then everyone does it. While that's happening, for 5 years in the gym, people have been working on defending and countering calf kicks, low kicks, and, you know, kicks below the knee, etc. That's happening every day. And there are certain gyms where they can't calf kick each other because they get fucking punched in the face. The brain has started to detect the movements that indicate that kick is coming and the counter is already coming. The same way a fastball pitcher's brain detects the fastball from the curveball or whatever. You start to see it and now it doesn't work and the counters happen. There are consequences. There are no free shots. There never will be. There'll be temporary periods where you think you got the answer. You got the fucking, the recipe to defeat everybody. And then just like that, and Chris, I hope he's okay. And this is no reflection on him. He's a brilliant martial artist, a wonderful human. Two more people are going to get their legs broken in half or get laid out in the middle of calf kicks over the next year. And then we'll see a lot less of them because they're not free. And everyone's acting like they're free.
Yeah. And we, as fans, we see the guys tempering their shins and we see the videos online and stuff of them, what we think is building up strength. But then there's a case like Weidman or a case like Anderson where these micro fractures build up over time and you do pay eventually. And that's what we saw. I do hope that there will be a way for doctors to detect this better. Yeah. So you know what your risk is. Again, I wish Weidman all the best and I hope it isn't the end for him. I think the one silver lining, I tried to think about the silver lining in that. The one, I guess, would be that Anderson Silva came back and did fight again. Yeah. Corey Hill, I don't think did. Yeah. And actually, I think he might Tyron have passed Spong. Away.
Yes, he did.
Rest in peace, Spong.
Yeah,
Corey Hill.
Yeah. He was Tyron Spong. Tyron Spong broke his same way. And he came back and fought. And still fights.
He's badass. He's like the Bo Jackson of mixed martial arts.
And he's big and powerful. Yeah. And he's brilliant. I'm such a fan. But if you see him, the bones of his, like Corey Hill had these long, 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 you know, tibias, fibulas, arm, like all of, he was a long dude at 145 pounds, cutting a lot of weight. So you would think that there was these extra elements that sort of cause structural issues with the body, but Tyrone is like a big, strong guy. The shin bones are probably like this Tim Hortons cup. Yeah. Like they're just, you know, and he still shout broke out to his. Timmy Hort. Yeah, he still broke his, but that's how hard he kicks. He kicks hard enough to fuck up his own leg. Think about that. This ain't a game. Like, and it's so, you know.
Yeah, you got to give Uriah credit, right? Because it is a defense move that works.
That's right.
And
when Chris broke Anderson's leg, Chris in their first fight, and I spoke to him about it and Ray Longo about it. They looked back, they were happy with everything, but he took too many leg kicks in the first fight. So they worked on, and literally it is a concept, a Jeet Kune Do concept called limb destruction, where if you're hitting me, I will damage your weapons using my body. And when Anderson's leg broke, the intent was to hurt Anderson's leg when he kicked you. The intent wasn't to break his leg, but that's a byproduct of your intent, which was to hurt him. Which is why when Chris was celebrating, people were like, why are you celebrating? It's like, well, I never realized how bad it was, but also that was the intent. I wanted to win the fight by hurting you when you tried to kick me. So it's limb destruction. It's an ongoing part of martial arts, always has been. There's so many aspects of it that people don't understand. When you go to kick me and I catch it, people are like, oh, he blocked that kick. I didn't block shit. You kicked me in the fucking arm.
Yeah, right? Momentum is there, and it's gonna
bone. Your thick bone cuts into my bone. It fucking hurts. So people are like, oh, that's nothing. It got blocked. What are you talking about? He kicked me in the arm as hard as he can. It hurts. Just like hit your arm a bit. It's like, oh shit. Like, you know, it's a part of fighting, destroying the weapons and the support systems and the scaffolding of the body of the opponent.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You see guys block a head kick and then they're not throwing the punches with the same power after that, after just blocking that. What do you think's next for Uriah Hall?
God.
What would you like to see?
That's a really good question. That, and you know what? I bet you if we ask him that today, it's like, oh man, I don't know. Like, this is going to have a psychological effect on him too today.
Yeah.
Like you're like, hey, Uriah, who do you want to fight next? And like, actually, it's actually very similar. If you ask Uriah, he'll be like, I 100% want to fight Izzy Adesanya. 100% he does. And it's through no fault of his own. That ain't happening after, if he had knocked out Chris in the second round with a spinning hook kick, that fight will be happening. That is not currently happening. So it's going to be the same thing. He is less, sort of autonomy over his own career. You know, he's 36, I think. He's a wicked martial artist. Maybe 300,000 followers on Instagram, like not enough leverage to get what he wants. So Uriah is literally going to be offered a fight or two that will fit the mid card of a pay-per-view or of a big card, and he's going to take it. And each time he does, he has to look at it like, this is the night that I have to do something meaningful so that I can then fight Izzy Adesanya, which is probably what he really wants. And that's a fucking amazing fight. That's an amazing high-level martial arts fight. But there's so much pressure when the thing.
Is there reward with the risk of, say, fighting someone, because he's ranked number 9. If he fights someone below that, say between 9 and 20, and he gets a definitive win, somebody with still with a bit of a name and some hype behind them, could he then maybe gain some favor with Dana? Because I know that there's been some sort of weirdness there. Could he set something up and think down the line? Fighter, two fighters away from Israel?
Yeah, and you either he's already fought Calvin Gastelum at the final of the Ultimate Fighter. You could do that. You could do that fight. I actually was at the MMA Awards and I was hanging out with the two of them. And they get along really good. But you could do that fight. But I think if he fought Paulo Costa. You can make that one. Did he fight him yet? I don't believe he did. Did he fight him?
Shout out to Niall Scollard from our Patreon, who's in the chat. He said Darren Till would be a good matchup.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a really good idea. Yeah.
But I love Costa.
Yeah.
I love that Costa idea, especially because Costa's such a star. And doesn't Uriah Hall already have a big win in Brazil where he
Anderson. He beat Anderson.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah. 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 So that's if we are the ones who get, and again, like, it's like, if I'm Uriah, I want what I want, because, and I'm, you know, he's the athlete. He should get what he wants, but that's not quite how it works. So you have to pick what you want with what could get made, and Costa could 100% get made. And it's fun. Also, Costa, you know, people will use the term like got exposed, but there are things that if you have a particular combat identity, there are certain things that people can exploit. And you are constantly changing as you get beat. Like when Costa got beat by Izzy, he will adapt and be like, okay, wait, if I'm overcommitted and people make me miss and I'm off balance, they fuck me up, I'll have to change that. But by changing it, you also take away some of what makes you great. But regardless, that's a fight that I think works for Hall. And I think we'd all kind of like it. And you're right. Costa's kind of a star.
Yeah. It would be definitely a main card. I could see that being on a pay-per-view, or it could even headline a card in Brazil for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Valentina giving Andrade quite the punishment there. I was surprised. I thought there was going to be more competitive.
Yeah. Valentina's just a fucking like she's an assassin. And it's weird. I was talking about this with a friend this week. It's like, you know, like you ever go, you watch an old blues guitar player and like, he's like 70 and he's playing some song. You're like, dude, I fucking hear the life experience in his notes. You know, that's how Valentina fights. Like, you can see this woman has fucking fought from, and she has literally, you know, we have her agent I work closely with helps me sort of do some of my stuff, my commentary and analysis gig. She helps me work on it. Jennifer Goldstein, she's amazing. And so I'm kind of close in their group and I hear a bit more of the stories, and I've talked to Valentina about her story. Like, she has hundreds, not dozens, hundreds of fights in all these different full contact things in Kyrgyzstan and other countries in Eastern Europe until she got out to South America, lived in Peru. She was in a fucking gunfight. Like, her coach got shot. Yeah. Like, she has lived a life of being a traveling killer.
Yeah, like, she's a G.
That's right. Yeah. So when I was talking to her about the fight before this one, and somebody compared her to Amanda Nunes, she goes, look, maybe she beat me. Maybe I'd beat her next time. She's like, but we're not the same. She's like, when you are, you become a UFC fighter in America, you fight 8 or 9 fighters, and then maybe you go to the UFC and you have 5 or 6 fights. She's like, she's probably had to kill people. Like, the way she's had to live her life has been protecting herself, trying to traveling the world as somebody kind of almost on the run with a dream of making it. She's a different fucking person, right? And then she was always really good. But then last night, this was sort of an almost like, are you fucking kidding me? You're not supposed to be in here with me. I'm way better than you. I'm just going to body lock you, take you down, smash your face in. Doesn't work the first 2 or 3 times. I'll do it until it works. And that's what she did. Like, she's a fucking badass. That's as bad of an ass human, like, man, woman, any way that exists in fighting. I'm an eternal fan of that human being.
I have a short clip from the fight that I'm going to pull up right now.
Seriously. Same here. I'm a huge fan. And what's the worst case scenario? Like, we get Nunes, Valentina. I mean, I say go best of 5. Why not?
Yeah. Agreed. Like, agreed. Yeah. Yeah.
It would arguably beat Amanda Nunes last time. Arguably.
Yeah. She's won rounds. She's won minutes. She's won exchanges. She's won phrases of the fight. Not many other humans could say that. Like, she gained real estate. Yeah.
She gained leverage and real estate.
Yeah.
It was a win in a way.
Yeah, she can beat that woman for sure. And, you know, they might fight five times and she might win one of them. She might win two of them. She might win three. She's not going to win four or five because she's already lost twice. But even as you say, like those ones were close. She was in them. She won rounds. When you're talking about somebody as the greatest ever and I'm able to win rounds against them, I'm real. Like, this is real. How many rounds you got to win? Well, you won one round in their three round fight and you won two rounds in their five round fight. Like, one other judge sees it a different way, and you're the greatest stepper of any weight. So we're in it, you know. She's a badass. Yeah,
she's up there for GOAT status now. Yeah, I really think.
Yeah.
What else is there? What other matchups are there?
Yeah. At some point, there's a girl and a woman in Bellator that fought a 300-pound man in Russia. I don't know if you saw that on the internet.
Yeah.
And it makes me uncomfortable. And for the most part, I just think culturally, we can't see a man attempting to strike a woman. Yet, if you ask Valentina, she'd probably like to fight some dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're probably not going to do that. We probably all agree we shouldn't do that. But in her life, she's knocked out men before. You know what I mean? In other situations.
And Triller would book it in a heartbeat if the contract was up. And it would be no different than what goes on at the gym all over the world every day. So
very true. Very true, except for the observation of it. So one of my main sparring partners when I was fighting was Sandy Seguras. Her nickname's Little Tyson. She was the Canadian boxing champion at my weight and fought for two world titles. Definitely won one in Germany against the German champion, but was robbed. And she's a badass. And she beat me up, you know, three times a week for 18 months. I did punch her in the face on occasion, but for the most part, she beat me up. We did that all the time, made me better. Very few other men would spar with her because they knew they'd get beat up and they couldn't handle that. I could handle that, made me a better fighter, made me a better human. It's the when we decide to put it on and say, you guy, you should punch her, try to kick her in the head. We don't have the time to educate every idiot out there who's watching that, who somehow could accidentally think that's a normal behavior. And that's the problem. That's why we can't have Valentina beaten up, trying to beat up Dominic Cruz.
Last night, Bilal Muhammad tweeted.
What if it's a YouTuber? If it's a YouTuber, that's all the better. I mean, you want to talk about make the fight right now.
We live in a different world. Even this conversation a year ago, it was way more offside than it is right now. you know, we're all okay with it if we know that she will win, which she would do against, like, you know, 99.999 repeating men of her weight on planet Earth. It's weird. We're not ready. We're not ready for that.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Brian?
Last night, Bilal Muhammad tweeted she beats Figueiredo.
She does. And, you know,
I don't know. I don't know. You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She's got 100 more fights than him. She's got 100 more fights.
And she was made in the red room.
He's got weight on her, though.
Yeah. Not much.
No.
Not much.
He's pretty big before the weight cut and after. Yeah.
So is she, though. She's a better martial artist than he is. A more skillful, more complete, more seasoned, you know, developed over in the fire over an extra 10 years kind of martial artist. However, there are genetic advantages to the biological structure of a male that would come into play. If he doesn't finish her in the first 10 minutes, she 100% wins that fight. It's difficult to say because, you know, Rogan talked about how Ronda would defeat most or many men back at the time, and he still takes heat for that. He wasn't incorrect at the time. He was correct because people, the game, as hard as this is to contextualize, the game wasn't quite understanding what she did. There's little hacks in how to play the game until the game is understood. You know, if I try to trick you with a card trick, if I try to trick your little sister with a card trick, she'll buy it. If I try to trick Penn and Teller, they'll punch me in the face. Yeah. Right. And it's the game is the same way until once it's understood, it's like, oh, everybody would beat Ronda. But before it was understood, that wasn't true. What Joe said at that time was somewhat truthful. But you know, we use something called resulting. We look 3 years later, we go, oh man, see, she got beat by Amanda. Joe Rogan said she would have beat. She would have at that time in that context, because it was a different time. The game was different and our understanding was different. This is, but you know, how, what an expert says and how an uneducated audience reacts is, you know, that's folly to try to analyze that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So let's go to the co-main, Rose Namajunas versus Zhang Weili. Rose with the head kick, KO. Unbelievable. What a moment. And just,
yeah,
that's like some, you can't write this. I mean, that's some theater. Yeah. To regain the bell is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like Joe says to her we're watching it, everybody saw it, it was so intense, you're reading her lips, right? And she's saying, I'm the best. And yeah, bink. And Joe says, you were saying I'm the best, and she's crying, she's like, I am the best. And it's like, you know, that, yeah, you couldn't, if that was a scene in a movie, you'd be like, ah, it's not real, you know?
Yeah.
It's my favorite moment of the night.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I look at the grin on her face. I am the best. And she's right. You know, that last night at that time, she was the best. And the actual like technique of it was super cool. I'm going to see if I can kind of just show you in super general term here. It's like, essentially, when you go to look at it, go watch it back, there's this little movement, right? Like, so she's here and you see her playing around with her front leg. And she kind of plays around with it and she takes it and she brings it back to here. And that's kind of an illusion, because normally when you see my leg come back to there, I slide back. So you sort of think, your brain thinks in that moment, I'm further away than I am, but my back leg hasn't moved. Right. So it's a trick. If my front leg goes back here, normally I'm here. But instead, that little trick of my front leg just goes back to here, I've tricked your brain into thinking I'm farther away than I am. It's a really cool little subtle thing. And then after that pullback, there's a small shuffle and a kick. And it's just really high-end, like exquisite expression of training, right? Those subtle things are the things that the real masters do. She did it, you know, and she did it. There's 60,000 people in the world that can do that kick in the gym. And there's six who can do it in a title fight in that moment, in a full arena under full duress with everyone staring at you. And she's one of them.
That's while the opponent has not read it right in that perfect moment. Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see what she does from here. Speaking of which, And let's go to the main event.
Yeah.
Usman, no longer Snoozman or whatever.
Marty, fake newsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really sealed the deal. Does he have a case now for GOAT status, or at least pound for pound?
Yeah. So yes. That's a crazy shot. And you know, it's one punch, but it's the one punch at the right time. Like, and you know, the best in the world, more or less, like for sure, six out of 10 times, the best in the world at any time is kind of the best ever, because the game is so much more advanced than even 2 years ago. You know, would Matt Hughes today be better than him in the context of today with today's coaching knowledge, diet, weight cutting science, all that? We don't know. But Matt Hughes then, compared to this guy now with all of that, he's just way better. And whoever is the 170-pound champion in 6 years will be way better than Usman. Even if it is Usman, he'll be way better than he was. That's the game. So the greatest at the moment, 6 out of 10, like a lot of time, more than half the time, is kind of the best ever. You know, is Izzy better than Anderson Silva? Well, yeah, he beat him. But also, is Izzy better than prime Anderson? Kind of, because the brain operates differently. Like a fastball hitter in 1958 hit 92 mile an hour fastballs. A fastball hitter in 2021 hits 108 mile an hour fastballs. The brain has to develop differently. They're different brains. Take the 1958 guy and put him against a 2021 pitcher. It just doesn't work. He can't hit the ball. It's the same thing. We're operating in speed, making all these calculations, algorithmically assessing everything that's happening. That's all happening because of the preparation, how the fighter prepared themselves to be able to do that in real time. So the best guy today is kind of the best guy ever, more or less, often. So yeah, he kind of is. That was
and the best guy today has fought a higher caliber of talent, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you compare to Anderson Silva with the 16, what it, was it 15 or 16 and 0 before he got his first loss? And then with Usman is probably close, 14 and 0 in the UFC.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Better guys, better coaches, schedule. Better training partners, tougher schedule, tougher opponents, heavier hitters, everything. Everything's better. You're right. It's perfectly contextualized.
Niall, you know, from the Patreon chat, shout out to Niall. He says Usman has the longest active winning streak in the UFC now. 14. Two more to tie with Anderson Silva. Yeah, and a tougher schedule than – I mean, Anderson, obviously, he fought for really tough guys. I mean, his first – what was his first fight? Was Chris
Leben.
Chumped him.
Yeah.
Did he ever? Yeah.
But what Jorge, humble and classy in defeat. And you know what? I think I gotta say, Leon Edwards, now this sets up Jorge versus Leon, and that's gonna be big money. I mean, that's gonna be
for sure. Yeah.
Jorge's real estate is still up there. Yeah. Oh, he is.
Leon's gonna fight Nate Diaz. But if I'm Jorge, let's rest my brain. Jorge's paying a lot of money. Let's go chill. If Nate Diaz wins, he'd probably say, Jorge, let me go fight for that belt again. But I think there's a pretty good chance you see, at least it's for sure being discussed, Nick Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. It is 100% being discussed. Nick wants to fight. Nick also, I'm told by some friends of mine that are close to him, that he really wants to fight Carlos Condit. Like, something about that fight really bugged him.
Really?
Also, Carlos Condit's kind of he is a legend. He's Nick's age or closer to it. You know, he's not a wrestler. He is not obsessed with wrestling. He's exciting. There's something about that fight that Nick wants, and that one kind of makes sense too. But yeah, if I'm Jorge, something like that. He doesn't want to fight Covington and probably may never. A rematch with Nate, if Nate wanted that. If he beats Edwards, or Edwards defeats him. Edwards wants to fight Usman, but they say, why don't you fight Jorge? Or Jorge fights Nick, which fucking would be cool. Nick's like, yo, you beat my brother. I'm coming for your stupid, whatever that other belt is. Right? That's the fun one.
We win. The fans win in the end, really, sure. in that week.
And Jorge wins. Jorge's made a lot of money in the last three fights. Diaz, the two Usman fights, you know, for sure $15 million. 3 years ago, you know, he had a really good performance. He knocked out Darren Till with an exciting blitz. He kneed Ben Askren in the face, which made him kind of took him to being a star. Then he fought Nick Diaz and had one of the best performances of his life. Won a belt, The Rock put it on him. And then he had two big paydays with this other dude who's the best in the world at the time. Like, if you're Jorge, life's good. Like, sucks that you get knocked out. It was a neat one because it's a little fake jab. And then so jab, hook, cross, super common. Fake jab, hook that actually grabs the hand and pulls it down for the cross. Go watch it. Watch it again.
It was beautiful.
Little of this.
Snooze.
Hook.
Snooze. Mon
grab. Ramon. Boom. Yeah. But there's the what is that. But the how and the why and the when is important. Again, you know, I can teach you that combination. You can drill it 700,000 times and you'll catch everybody in the gym. But to do it against Jorge in that moment requires a whole lot of things, including the when, the how you trick his brain in the moments before, and full commitment. You have to fully believe in that punch. And you think you do every other punch, but you don't. It's almost believe. And in that moment, the full, like, deep commitment to it, it was just, there was a whole lot of things last night that felt very Josh Barnetty to me, the way that
shout out to the War Master,
the best, the way that Shevchenko fought, that was like full Josh Barnett. She's like, fuck you, take you down, smash your face. Yeah. And the way that there was, I think it was Pedro Hizo in an early, what was that clothing company that did fights? Affliction. Josh yeah. Barnett was fighting Affliction, and he kind of threw a few shallow punches, and then he threw one with just brutal depth where he tricked Hizo into believing that he was safe from the right where he was, and then smashed him with it. And that was a little bit of what was at play there, whether Usman did it intentionally or not. That's what happened from Jorge's point of view, was he felt safe in places he was unsafe. And that's the game.
Yeah, no, it was great. If you missed the card, check it out, and be sure to check out Robin Black on Instagram, with working with a bunch of great companies like Bellator, who we got to say, you know, now with this deal with Showtime and this card coming up May 7th, Archuleta versus Pettis, plus Johnson versus Romero. Yeah. And it's Sergio Pettis, yeah. the younger yeah. brother.
Yeah.
That this card, it looks incredible. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Bellator is doing great stuff. Like really fucking good stuff. It's a cool team of people. It's much smaller. The fighters are super happy. Like, and they want to perform for it. You see it on all over on the internet and stuff. They kind of cheer for Bellator, which is kind of neat. Like they're really proud to fight for it. And the fights are great. And like, you know, this card, like Romero versus AJ, you got to see that. And Archuleta, this is a really important fight for him. He's like, been a four division champion before he was in Bellator. I think it was, I forget which one it was. One of the King of the Cage, I believe. He was a four division champion. Then in Bellator, he was like on literally a 15 fight winning streak, something like that. Lost to Pitbull. And now he's, you know, Pettis is one of these fights that can make people go, oh, right. Like people are starting to get it. Like Douglas Lima, Pitbull. There are people in there that are as good as anyone in the world. If Michael Chandler is the UFC champion in 3 weeks, Pitbull will show that footage of him knocking him out in the first round for the rest of his life and say, I'm the UFC champion. Like Bellator is happening. Like it's good. It's fun working with them, and the fighters are amazing and the fights are amazing. And I really like the, it's not super corporate, you know, it's a little more punk rock. Like I like hanging out in there. I like hanging out and working with those people.
I can imagine it's great. Anytime I've gone to an event or did the podcast at one of their events, it's been awesome. Shout out to Danny Brenner and the whole, anybody who's current, past. Yeah. There's been some great fights. I love going to their events, and I like that there's a little mixture of I mean, this the most respectful way, yeah. but the tad slight bit of the freak show fight every now yeah. and then. I love that because I'll watch two bums fighting, you know,
yeah.
And yeah. I know you will too.
Yeah. And in fact, when Askren was fighting Jake Paul, people were like, what do you think of it? And I'm like, I'm just at the raw of the fighting. I'm like, well, you've got a guy who's a lifetime combat sportsman. He's not specialized in this area, but, and you've got a novice, you've got a, you know, big, strong novice with the added pressure of judgment and people paying attention to him, not fully developed as a boxer against a guy who's a lifetime combat sportsman with a weakness in this specific area. I don't get to see that too often. So yeah. Never mind who hates who and whatever, just that dynamic. You don't get to see it very often. So I was interested in it, you know? Yeah, I'm interested in combat of any kind. And even when Francis Ngannou fought Big Derek Lewis, and on the Sunday and the Monday morning, I was, you know, talking on SportsCenter Radio and wherever all these people were asking, they're like, is that the worst fight you've ever seen? I'm like, no, it was fascinating. Like, yeah. It was fucking fascinating. Because to me, people are like, well, why aren't they doing anything? And I'm like, that's the fascinating part. If you ask those two men an hour earlier, what would be your biggest fear? They'd be like, it's just not being able to perform. And if you ask them an hour later, they'd be like, I don't know why that happened.
Yeah.
That to me is fascinating. We need yeah. to explain what's happening in the fucking gray matter of these two individuals that created this dynamic. To me, that's fucking fascinating. So,
yeah, because it's a nullification in a different form, right?
Yeah. Your hesitation and my hesitation, how was it created? And if in between rounds, your coach would be like, bro, you're fucking this up. I know. You know, just throw some punches. Yeah. And you go up there and you do it again. Your brain is overriding what you want. Okay, now I got to figure this out. This will send me into three books and and doing podcasts with multiple, you know, neurologists and people who study psychology until I can try to get a theory as to what is actually happening. I'm fucking curious, right? Every fight is interesting. Every single time two human beings, especially if they have trained their whole lives, every time you put them together, there's something magical and rare that's going to happen. Even if they fight again, it'll never be this scenario. This is a unique experience every single time.
Yeah. So do you want to see DC versus Jake Paul next?
Kind of. Yeah. Like, I kind of do, because Dan would just lay that guy out. Like,
or is that a work? Are we getting work there? Is that
actually, here's the problem is Daniel Cormier is a very, very, very big pro wrestling fan. Right.
Yeah.
So you can't trust this. Like, even when he's over there, like yelling at him in the audience, it's like he's definitely looking at that this morning going, ah, oh, people are buying it. They're buying into it. Right. Because that's his thing. Like, I'm not so into that. Although when it relates to the fighting, you know, Art of War, Sun Tzu stuff, the misdirection and the making people believe certain things strategically is useful for combat. So in that respect, I get it. But in just the respect of making a comic book together tonight on the internet, it's not my thing as much. But Cormier loves that shit. So you cannot trust him. If him and Jake Paul have some scenario ever take shape, it will be a work, no doubt.
Yeah, I but just hope that...
If they fight, DC's going to...
Kill him.
I mean...
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah. Of course. Yeah, he would lay that guy out so quick. And it's wild now when you talk to people, you know, we live in a world, right, where most of us don't know almost anything about any topic, but we're all quite sure we know a lot about it because we watch television. You can watch CNN or Fox or MSNBC, doesn't matter. You watch that and you're like, I totally understand COVID. I know how politics works. I know about the economy. I fucking got all of it. Same thing. You can watch 8 UFCs a year and be pretty sure, or, you know, 10 Showtime boxings and be pretty sure you know about fighting, but you don't know anything about it. If I tell you that chocolate makes dogs sick, you'll be like, yeah, that's true. And then if I said, that's all there is to know about chocolate, you'd be like, no, there's a lot fucking more to know about chocolate. Just because you know this much about boxing doesn't mean that's all there is to know about boxing, but we think we do. There are people who cannot comprehend that boxing, like all skills, playing guitar, fucking freestyle rap, painting, you know, building houses, doesn't matter. These are skills that are developed through deliberate practice, coaching, effort, trial, error, self-improvement, analysis of your own process until you get better. And that takes many years. And if you've done that with boxing for 2.5 years, there's a maximum height of how good you can get. And that's where Jake Paul is. And that's very fucking low compared to Daniel Cormier, right? You know, that's just the truth. It's for a lot of people, it's just fun to debate about shit that they know nothing about. I guess it's fun.
Well, if Anthony Johnson, who, by the way, the last time I saw him, it was a picture where he looked like he ate the old Anthony Johnson. If he was to come back to the UFC, do you think at heavyweight, do you think they would make AJ versus Ngannou first, or would he have to beat would he have to beat John Jones? Would he have to be Derek Lewis? Or
it would all so again, it'll depend on the money. Like, you can follow the potential money. If they looked at it and they're like, this will be massive, then let's go make it. If they were like, this would be way more massive if he first beat somebody else. Look at this man. Yeah, he's a monster. And he's my friend Evan Boris, I was talking to him a little bit after the show last night. He's held pads from a lot. He works under Henry Hooft. Henry is his master and Evan's a high-level coach. And they call him the Ferrari. They're like, when you go to hold pads for him, you're like, oh, I get to drive the Ferrari. Because he's not just big or strong or muscular or powerful. It's just knockout power in both hands. He is efficient. Like, he's smooth. And we were talking about it a little bit last night, Evan and I, about Ngannou. It's similar. And there are others. Chad Mendes was somebody like this. You know, there are, even in his era, in his own way, Matt Hughes was someone like this. Your neurology, like the nervous system, the way that the nervous system works with your musculature is an athlete. Like you're a neurological athlete as well as a big athlete. That's why AJ's so good. There's a lot of muscular guys. We could go on the internet and go jacked dude, and we could have thousands of pictures. None of them will kick like AJ because their bodies don't work that way. AJ works that way. And then he's been trained over many years of his life, deliberate practice. He's a monster. If they thought it could make money, if they thought, well, it's a risk to have him fight somebody else, but if he defeats them and there's a big highlight we could use to then sell against Francis Ngannou. So it's all, you know, when you look under the hood, the talking about the art and the sport is so different than the business, because the business is driven by commerce. The art is driven by art, and the sport is a bit of both of those things. So I always like to think about it in reality, you know, the reality of it. And the answer is almost always, if the money could be made, you get it. Like, hey, Brock Lesnar comes back tomorrow. Oh, he can fight Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
Well, shouldn't Brock have to? Nope. He can fight Francis Ngannou. That's just a done deal, right? Like, and why? Then people would be like, but he failed a drug test. He's 43 years old. He hasn't fought in 3 years. Well, I think he deserves it, because that's the money. You know, the money drives it, right? So, but hey, yeah, Brock Lesnar totally versus agree. Anthony Johnson. Let's have that.
Oh. That would be amazing. And I'm not looking Jesus. Past Yoel Romero at all. I'm just thinking, as far as we've seen a lot of the matchups that we wanted to see with Yoel in the UFC. I'm just thinking as far as exciting crossovers with Bellator and UFC.
Yeah, that would be fun, man. I think a lot of people will see AJ, informed people will see AJ as a favorite, Anthony Johnson as a favorite. Doesn't mean he'll win, but you know, Romero's, they're both a little older, but Romero's 42 or something. Romero has been a little hesitant at times, you know. He's made good money. Like, it's difficult. If I'm Romero, I'm going to punch long enough to get a hold of him and see if I can throw this guy on his back, which he doesn't do a lot of, but that'll be really fun. People are going to dig that fight. That's in 2 weeks. That's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I can't wait. And Robin, thank you so much for the time today. Where can everybody find you?
I got a YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Robin Black, but I'm not on there as much. Mostly I really focus on my 1 and 2 minute breakdowns, you know, where I analyze moments, and Instagram. I put them up there always at Robin Black Martial Arts and at Robin Black Martial Arts on Facebook and at Robin Black MMA on Twitter. And a lot of stuff on the Bellator YouTube and Instagram page as well. We share a lot of my stuff there. Yeah, I'm really lucky, man. I just get to like literally study martial arts all day and then share what I find. And people pay me really good for that. And that's fucking
it's
weird,
great.
But awesome.
It's great.
It's amazing,
content,
man.
Your content is great, as well as your attitude on life. And I really appreciate you, and you're a great follow on Instagram. I'll make sure I subscribe to your YouTube page today too, if I'm not already. And who knows, maybe Fight Buddies will be an ongoing thing here.
Yeah,
thank
man.
You. Thank you for, again, for coming on. And thank you, Brian. Where can they find you, Brian?
Find me everywhere. B McKay's right. And then, you know, sub to Gas Digital. Use promo code JASTA.
Thank you. Yes. And go dig the archive. Check it out. Give us a like. Hit the subscribe and check out the archive. I've had, again, Matt Mitrione, Kimbo Slice, Nick Diaz, Josh Barnett, shout out to the War Master, Matt Brown.
Awesome is this
shout
there?
Out to we got the How Awesome Is This, the movie podcast.
Godzilla
you can come on.
Kong is
yeah,
up
we
there
should
now.
Have. Did you do a Kong versus Godzilla breakdown yet, Robin?
No, not yet.
No, we got to have Robin on for Mortal Kombat.
Oh yes, you got to come on the movie podcast for Mortal Kombat.
I'm in.
Awesome.
Any
awesome.
Chance to get to hang out with you, man? Count me in.
Appreciate it, Robin. Thank you so much, brother.
Enjoy the hostilities, my friend.
Yeah, give us a bink too. We need a bink. Hope you all enjoyed the show. Thanks again to Robin Black. Thank you, Brian. What'd you think?
I love Robin, man. He's one of my favorite guests on any show he's on.
Seriously, he's one of my favorite personalities just in entertainment, not even just MMA, but he's got such a wealth of knowledge, you know, being a former rocker, actually put his body and his brain on the line.
Went
in the
cage Thailand,
too.
Right?
Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff. And I just love that he's always moving and shaking and doing commentary and doing fun videos. I love the bink. I love he's the baron. He's the bishop of the bank. He's the baron of the bank. But I don't know what's better. He like bishop.
So people got to start paying you. Oh, excuse me. People got to start paying you for this shit, man.
For the marketing.
Yeah, no, dude.
he actually, right before we started recording, he said that he would love to join this podcast weekly for a segment.
Yeah, so fuck yeah.
That would be great. And I reached out to a bunch of my friends in MMA and said I was bringing back the Fight Buddies podcast. And we're looking for sponsors. We're looking
for...
Should
we also cover like freak show fights?
We should yeah, cover it all.
You know,
Robin's working CES. I would cover that. I would cover Bellator, PFL. Bisping
doesn't let me have any fun with freak show shit. He's like, nope, not UFC. We're not doing it. So
I know. So we got it. That'll be our lane. He can have, dude. We want to talk about Gabby. We want to talk about Bob Sapp. We want to talk anything like we could talk about the Barstool shit, the Rough and Rowdy. We could talk,
you know, Harrington,
have Robin break that down.
Harrington, it's like his make a wish to go to fucking join Rough and Rowdy.
That's amazing. He totally should. Shout out to Harrington. He should totally do that.
Yeah, dude. That's my
He was in the studio when Robin Black came and did the Josta show. He
fanned out.
Yeah, he was psyched.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is, like, he doesn't fan out for anybody, really. You know,
no, like, not like
we're
that.
All fucking jaded. We see fuck people every day, but like occasionally, like when Aunt Martini came on the show, I was like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah. It depends what your niche is, and
yeah,
like,
dude.
And they're in that same niche, but that dude, when it reminded me. You know, talking about Bellator reminded me of being able to do the podcast with Kimbo Slice and then also walking to and from the room to do the podcast with him and seeing that excitement, seeing people freak out and nerd out on Kimbo is kind of like, that's the spirit of this podcast, right? Like, and that this event gave me that again. It made me want to nerd out because I think not only just the crowd, but also seeing where we go from here, right? Because you had three belts on the line, you have all these cool matchups like we talked about that can happen in the near future. But yeah, we totally should talk about the PFLs, the Bellators, the CESs, all that.
Although
and the freak show
I was going to say one thing that I didn't get to during the show is, and Chael said this a couple of days ago, he made a really good point. I don't think Leon Edwards should fight Jorge Masvidal because you can't reward that backstage brawl bullshit with a huge fight. You just can't.
Oh shit.
You can't do it because now everybody's going to be throwing hands in the back trying to get a big money fight, trying to, you know, it's
oh, just, I didn't think about it like that. Well, I thought Leon's paid his dues since then though. I thought
for
that's...
sure. But again, Masvidal's not ranked higher than Leon Edwards. And the only thing that Leon could get from that is revenge, really. Like a big fighting a big name,
but they already rewarded it, right? They already rewarded it by because it made look the knockout of Till was just part of the story. The other part was the backstage antics.
Oh yeah,
so it was
course.
A part of their marketing. They if they didn't use it in their marketing, I could see where Chael's coming from. But they used it in their marketing. No.
Yeah. All right. I guess you have a point. I just agree with the thought process that you can't match a fight up because two dudes scuffed in the back.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to. I get that. You don't want to have that keep
become
popping
the
up.
Culture.
But then again, they use that with the Conor brawl too, throwing the
yeah.
The
but
dolly
Conor fucking
shit.
Had to pay, dude. Conor had to pay a ton of money.
Yeah,
he got fined so much money. I mean,
true.
I guess it's a
well,
drop in the bucket comparatively. But yeah, from what I understand, he got fined like a motherfucker for doing that.
Yeah. Well, this would be all interesting stuff to talk further about on upcoming episodes. So hit us with a like and a subscribe and leave a comment below and let us know who you want to see on the Fight Buddies podcast.
And we'll start a new email for this so you can send in questions, send in video questions. You know what? I'll give you that email next time. It'll probably be fightbuddies@gmail.com, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Or hit the hotline 201-677-8032 and let us know. But yeah, I reached out to like Josh Barnett, reached out to Matt Brown, Chris Camozzi, a bunch of people that we're going to have over the next coming weeks, especially now with the schedule for UFC, for Bellator and everyone getting back to normal. It's looking awesome. And yeah, we will cover the Rough and Rowdies and the Ryzens. And the Trillers
fight with fucking
Ellis Mania, whatever. Mania.
Yo, Jace, we'll I'm sorry. I don't know. Lewis is not small and Lewis has been training for a while.
Yeah.
But Jason Ellis is a prison bred motherfucker from Australia. Like, I don't necessarily think Lewis knows what he's getting into.
No, he's gonna kill Lewis. I'm sorry, Lewis. I love you, Lewis, but he'll kill you, and then maybe at the after party, you know, he'll make it up to you. You never know, right? Like, he's
Rogan called Dave and Dave Smith and was like, "You've really got to talk Lewis out of this fight."
Well, good. We'll cover it. Yeah, I gotta hit Jason up. Shout, maybe he can be a guest on Fight Buddies.
Oh, he'll do Fight Buddies. We can have Lewis and Jason do Fight Buddies together.
Yeah, because we got to help build the marketing for the fight. Yeah. I feel like not enough people are talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they should hit up Triller and get it on the Triller undercard for the next Triller.
I think they're planning on banking on Ellis Mania with this one.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, Immortal Coffee, theimmortalcoffee.com. Use the promo code JOSTA21. And if you got any interested sponsors out there for the Fight Buddies podcast, hit us up. For now, we'll just use JostaShow@gmail. But yeah. We'll be back to enjoy some more consensual violence on the next episode.